Hi, welcome to the Design Thinking Roundtable, a podcast which explores various aspects of design and how it can create change and social impact. I'm Anna Fayard, an ethnographer who researches, teaches, and practices human-centered design with a focus on social innovation and collaboration. And I love having conversations on design with passionate and mindful designers.
Eric Ho is an architect, entrepreneur, and urban thinker passionate about architecture and urban environments that have a lasting impact on society. Eric is currently the co-founder and director of Architecture Commons, a design agency for urban innovation based in Hong Kong. He recently started Neighborhood Innovation Lab, an initiative that seeks to understand how to use a human-centered design approach to foster an inclusive neighborhood identity in dense Asian cities. Recently, the work of Neighborhood Innovation Lab has been awarded honorable mention in Fast Company's World Changing Ideas 2020 under the Spaces, Places and Cities category. Eric is also a faculty member at Parsons School of Design in their Executive Master's Program in Strategic Design and Management. In addition to his passion for architecture, Eric is also a social entrepreneur. He has started a civic startup, Miles, as a real estate platform for short-term commercial uses, and Good Goods, a next-generation shared economy platform for retail. Eric, thank you for joining me today. Could you tell me a bit more about your journey? What is your background, and how did you get interested in human-centered design?
Yeah, so thanks for inviting me on this. I'm really excited to chat with you again, and Laura. So I'm an architect, so I study at Harvard Graduate School of Design. I graduated 2006. I've always been interested in a little bit more than architecture. So I think during school, I was at a research trip to Sri Lanka looking at post-disaster housing. That was the time when it was the post-tsunami situation back in 2005. And I think it was probably around that time that I also recognized that, you know, architecture can't really solve anything or can't solve a lot of things. Like, there's a lot of bigger issues, systemic issues, infrastructure, that it's, you know, bigger than, you know, a building or, you know, even, you know, a whole neighborhood. So I think I sort of have embedded kind of that seed in me. And then when I was doing thesis with Herzog Dameron, the thesis was a little bit different also, because that time, the thesis group, it was a thesis group of students, and we were basically looking at regional issues. The region that they chose was Canary Islands, which I have no knowledge of. Like, Canary Island, where is it? What's on it? So I think when I was doing thesis, I was literally driving around the island, like trying to look for a thesis, trying to look at what the context, issues and opportunities were. And again, like, I think that realization was it's basically more than architecture. There's a lot of things that architecture cannot solve. You know, cultural, contextual, economic issues that were like a lot bigger than architecture. So I think those two incidents kind of were seeds in my mind. And then I went back to, you know, when I graduated, you know, I went to a corporate firm, I went to a star architecture firm, and, you know, but I think throughout those 6-7 years, I wasn't specifically like very satisfied, because I don't feel like I had a lot of connection with people in general. I guess there's connection with clients, but you never really, as an architect, you never really get to connect with like the actual users or people, right? Like, you're always behind the client, or your client always have to brief, or is this corporate building in India that, you know, it's, you know, all across the globe, and, you know, you really don't really know the contacts in a lot of ways. So I think during that time, I guess you were in New York at that time. That was the time when General Assembly was like super hot. I don't know if you were in that community. So I was like, oh, it's really exciting. There's a lot of different classes at General Assembly. And I think I stumbled upon like some classes that would taught by IDEO people, like design thinking. And so I think that's when I really started to get into HCD and what design thinking really is, because I actually have never actually crossed path with the design thinking methodology. And I think it was that time that I also started to look at OpenIDEO platform, which is this open kind of generation design thinking platform. And I felt very energized by the process. And so, so that's I guess how my HCD journey started. Yeah.
You know, I've always been curious about your use of the term civic design. And I think that when we first met back in, is it 2013, I believe, you had just implemented Miles, which is a civic startup that opens storefronts to possibilities by activating urban neighborhood for pop-up entrepreneurship, and particularly in Lower East Side in New York. And so I kind of got interested in this notion of civic design. And then, you know, as I was researching before our conversation, I realized that that led you to develop Storefront for the Commons, this exploratory documentation and architectural prototype, where it seems that the storefront is becoming the starting point to explore, you know, different spaces in our cities. And so can you tell me a bit more about these two projects and how they connect and how they are examples of civic design for you? Because it seems it's really putting together what you just mentioned you felt was missing. It's like the architecture, the space piece with the people.
Miles is always a very dear project for me, for my personal journey. It actually came out from OpenIDEO. So I think at that time I was looking at OpenIDEO. I was like, there's a lot of interesting ideas, but they never really get implemented. Like, it's always just like at an idea stage, and it's like very like rosy and great. So I think at that time, Miles was me trying to connect some other folks' idea on OpenIDEO and try to see like, hey, in New York City, I think at that time it was something about revitalizing neighborhood. It was the challenge of OpenIDEO. And I was like, I was literally like walking around Lower East Side one day and was like, well, Lower East Side is not like a bad neighborhood, or like, you know, it's not like Detroit back then, right? Like it's you know, vibrant, but there was like a lot of empty stores. So I think it was funny because I was still, you know, working at that time, right? Like, and I think I hired like a task rabbit to like count how many like empty storefronts were there, like for the neighborhood. It was very fast. Like, you just count how many storefronts, and it was, I think it ended up to be like 200 plus storefront in just, you know, Lower East Side alone. And I was like, well, there must be something there. Like, there's so much unused storefront, and there's a neighborhood with so much vibrancy. Like, what's what's the issue? So I think the design thinking, kind of the architects kind of both kind of connect at that point, like the both mindset. It's like, can I kind of explore this to see, you know, can I connect some of these storefronts to activate them, you know, how could I activate them? And I think that was just a very, very a naive thought in a way. And so I think when I was doing that, I was trying to get into a competition, like trying to create an idea, and somehow I won the competition, and there was like a little bit of money. And so I was like, what am I gonna do with this? So then I think I just went around and pitched to some people in the neighborhood, and I was very lucky to found an NGO called Fourth Arts Block. Tamara was like kind enough and like very open enough, like, yeah, we have an empty storefront, like, we don't know what to do with it, like, why don't you try something? And so that was like the start of it, like, you know, okay, well, there was actually the openness to connect with people and share the idea with them, and also just, you know, actually quite naively just like go in and try out some stuff. And so I think that was the first time that I actually, you know, really sort of embraced the design thinking principle into implementing. And then I think at that time, from that experience, I started to pitch to different landlords and different sort of storefront owners, and they're actually, some of them, you know, some of them are very, very reluctant, but then some of them are very open to connect and actually open up their storefront. So that started sort of the mouse journey of like, how do I then get other people to use it? And I think the way that it connects to civic design is as an architect, like I think I was able to kind of become the role of sort of a facilitator, like, hey, this is a space of X square feet, you know, you can use it for so-and-so, and we also have a flexible, changeable furniture that you can use, so you don't actually need to bring anything in. So in some ways, civic design kind of bridges the gap of the very pain point, which is storefronts are expensive and has very long leases. So I was able to sort of bridge that gap. Hey, you can come in for, I think it was like even hours, I did try hours, day, week to kind of come in to do something super short, and then have your storefront and convert into sort of your vision of what a storefront can be. So storefront is sort of I don't know, like something that I felt is sort of a very important point of connection between in the neighborhood, because storefront is always transparent. You can see what's going on inside. So like if there's a random like odd event inside a storefront, like it really connects to the neighborhood. It's like, what's going on here? Like, what are the people there? And maybe there's a lot of, and then through that experience, there's a lot of conversation and connection with the community that actually see these random stuff happening in these sort of pop-ups, right? So Miles was sort of that project for a little bit, and we activated 10, 15 storefronts, and it's like a wave that comes and goes. You know, sometimes the stores got rented out for long term, then we have to like open up more storefronts. So it was very dynamic, very interesting. So Storefront for Commons was kind of a more academic version of it, because at that time, I think it was the site was actually at Hell's Kitchen in a place called Prime Produce. So it was a very interesting place where the owners of the store of the place was very open to also for us to propose ideas what could go into their store, and so we were like, what if we create an experiment where people can just say what they want in the storefront and do whatever they want. Instead of a pop-up, it's more kind of a community conversation of how a storefront can be. And there's in that way, it's a little bit different than the pop-up because it's actually semi-governed. So there's this NGO bodies that is allowing this to happen and sort of and this opening and closing. So the commitment of someone coming in is less. You know, you can even just chill for, you know, a couple of hours. You know, you can do whatever you want and you can propose different things. But like, it's not as if you're like taking the store for a week and kind of doing your own pop-up. So in a way, it was another sort of form of this experimentation of like, what can a store that becomes, I guess, more democratic and bottom-up could be. And so that was a sort of a very specific sort of iteration of the mouse experiment in a way, yeah.
Super interesting to see how you kind of shifted. You kept the physical space, and I like this idea of like, you know, the storefront as a liminal space between, you know, the store or the inside, whatever is the inside and the street, and connecting people and like turning it, because, you know, from the pop-up to inviting people. It just also reminds me, you know, in some cities, plazas where people, you could imagine, you know, a group of doing something here or there, and so, and having it like, but more localized. I guess it's a nice connection to the other kind of theme that I've seen in your work, and that I think you, is what you're doing currently in Hong Kong. This notion of multi-stakeholder collaboration, because I think that from what I understand, the neighborhood lab where you aim to, I really like this phrase, design human-centered neighborhoods, which, you know, aim to engage in and reconnect people and communities within urban spaces. So I'd like to know a bit more about the process, you know, you follow in creating these neighborhoods. And in particular, I was like looking at your website and you had this point about, you know, the importance of multiple neighborhood stakeholders engagement and creating partnerships across them. And so I, you know, if you could tell me more about the process and the role of these like multi-stakeholder partnership or collaboration.
So yeah, so Neighbor Innovation Lab, we started in 2019. If you guys didn't know, that was the time that there was a lot of social protest in Hong Kong. So the birth of it is sort of in relationship, but also in parallel, because we have been thinking about that for a while already. But it was actually very timely because there was not a lot of, cross communication between different beliefs and ideals within the city and I guess within the neighborhood. So when we started Neighbor Innovation Lab, it was like really like we were really starting from, again, from a very naive kind of point of view. It's like, why don't we just go down in the neighborhood and just talk to people and like listen to like what they have to say, like what do you think about the neighborhood, what do you think about can be better in a neighborhood. And because we were, well, a lot of us were architects, so like we obviously started from kind of a public space perspective, which is always a good kind of entry point, because people can always relate to public space, whether it's parks, streets, pavement, you know, however you kind of claim your public space. So when we went down a neighborhood, it was really funny because at that time it was actually district council election and people were thinking we're like district councilors like trying to like get votes by, you know, listening to like what people were saying. So it was that we started. We actually got friendly with one of the district councilors that got elected because of that. and we actually started to converse a lot more, like what can we, through the district council format, can we actually help? And I think he actually gave us a lot of hints because his mentor was a very successful district councilor like 10 years back, and we're able to do a lot of civic work with different like architects, activists, even government officials. And so he was like, yeah, well, with your design thinking and your like placemaking stuff, like you can really at least start some conversation going within the neighborhood so that people can be aware that like they can voice their opinions on the neighborhood. So if you're not familiar, if you're from Europe, obviously you guys probably have that infrastructure built in, or in America, but in Hong Kong, that muscle is very, very much not used. Like we actually don't have that mechanism. So like people can't really voice, hey, I want, you know, something happen to my, you know, parks. There's no channel to actually kind of create. So people actually don't have that muscle of like, oh, well, I have an opinion and I can make a difference. So I think that's where the first project that we did was actually through district council, and it was a little bit of funding from district council to actually just go in a neighborhood, and we call it neighborhood commons. So neighborhood commons of, you know, how can we actually look at public space, streets, pavement, how can we activate them to be something that you want or something that the community wants. So from there, we started to work with different NGOs. So one of the NGOs here were like, that's really interesting. Can you do something similar in another neighborhood? And so we did. So I think we created another sort of same methodology. We did like street polling. We did like one-on-one interviews on the streets. And then we basically did quant and qual surveys and analysis of like what are some needs of the neighborhoods are. And then from there, we actually started to pitch some of these ideas to developer, to academia, even to government departments. And we have, you know, obviously we have success and failures, but I think so far we have worked with a developer on another neighborhood. We have worked with academia on looking at a public park to see how we can create the same methodology and then connecting that to design. And then now we're working with the government department, the architectural services department, to look at cross-sector, cross-departmental conversation around public space in Hong Kong. Super challenging because government departments they're all at different places. And so for them, they want to become the department that actually liaise all these different departments, talk about public space. And I would imagine public space in different cities is similar. Like you have maybe, I think when I was talking to someone in New York, you have 9 departments, you know, on one public space, and they all do different things. And so they all don't talk to each other. They all have different priorities. You know, a lot of them are very conservative because they're operational focused. So I think same with Hong Kong. So I think that's where those conversations are very, very much needed and very tricky because who do you hit at the right level and, you know, how can that person influence, you know, his or her staff within the department is very, very challenging. And same with developers. When we're working with the developer, I think the executive level people understand what we're doing, but I think the middle managers and the middle management has like no clue, like what are you doing and like what are you trying to sort of achieve. So I think the whole process of multi stakeholder collaboration is both a giant I guess education process for them and for us, and also to figure out what is sort of the shortest path to create sort of these changes, and how do we create these shortcuts within the right context. And I think that's that we're obviously still in the middle of learning. We found out that actually NGOs are the best to work with because they are very open. They on sort of the alignment level, they're already there, but obviously they're the ones with the least resources. So that's also challenging in terms of us carrying out our work. So I think so far we have a palette of like experiences, and we're still trying to kind of connect them together to see how we can do our next better project.
Looking forward to see how this palette is shaping up. It is super challenging, but I think it's also for this kind of very complex problem, potentially the only way to really lead to change. Listening to you, it's interesting because you mentioned when you were discussing the neighborhood lab that you started being very naive, and you mentioned that also when you started with Miles. And I'm just curious if that's really being naive, or if at least we need that kind of naivety to get started, because if not, it's just too complex.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you worry about what would happen, then you would never do it. And I think I'm always like, let's just do it and see what happens. And if it doesn't work, then you know, you lose an afternoon. You lose maybe a week or 2 weeks, but I think I don't know. I mean, it's hard. Sometimes you always also want to protect your team. Like, I mean, if I go down to a neighborhood and talk to people and it was a failed experience, like I don't know if you know my team would feel the same way, because I think that would be also the challenge, right? Like, how do you also keep the momentum? Like if it's a place that is always about innovation, there's always going to be failure. And so like, how do you protect your team from that like very rosy vision of everything is going to work, and kind of give them that resilience that's needed. So that's that I'm still learning. So
So it's interesting because, yeah, there's that part which is the kind of the internal dynamics within a team, which I think is super important. I was also listening to you wondering if like this naive posture is also not useful to engage outsider.
Yeah, we actually, throughout our projects, we have been training what we call, in Cantonese, called Kaifeng fellows. So Kaifeng in English is community. So like these are people that are just really from the neighborhood. And for some reason, every time we call for these fellows, like they are from all over the place, like different ages, like different backgrounds, different, because we thought they would mostly be students, but actually they're not. Like they're, you know, some of them are professionals, some of them have like successful businesses. Like we're like, yeah, why are you here? Like, you know, doing this like fellowship. Like, and I think it was very interesting to see the diversity of these Kaifeng community fellows coming through our programs. And I think sometimes they become a buffer. Like if we were to try something different, I mean, we're also learning across the different projects, but like some of the very, obviously the very tedious stuff, like, oh, you know, like taking notes and like, you know, doing interview notes, and they actually are very happy to kind of try it out, because that becomes part of the design thinking, I guess, experience. Like, you know, in order to do quant and qual research, you know, that's part of it. And I think that gives our team a little bit of a buffer, like, okay, well, we can actually lean on some of the community to actually help do our work, which is very interesting, because then obviously a lot of the stuff we do are consultancy work, which we got paid to do, but at the same time, we're leaning on these kind of very passionate folks from the community to help us as we also train them on design thinking. And I think that interaction has been quite fruitful across the different projects, and it becomes this very interesting, I guess, also multi-sector kind of collaboration, because the fellows sometimes see stuff that we would never be able to see because of the backgrounds are different. Some of them might be journalists, some of them might be, you know, different backgrounds, and their observation, looking at design thinking, is able to tell us very different things that, let's say, our teams of designers might not be able to see. So I think that was a very good surprise on our end, that when we started that, we didn't know. That's something that is unexpected.
I can see how they have a different eye and bringing a different perspective on the problem. And I guess listening to you also talking about the way you tried, well, both, I guess, the neighborhood lab, but even more Miles, like how you started with this sense of like doing. And so not only, you know, coming up with good ideas, but also kind of acting. I'm just wondering, like, it just reminded me the conversation we had when you were, you know, after Miles, you started the Do Tank, which was exactly, you know, a kind of a more structured version than these fellows, but which was like kind of making people learn the process by working on projects. And I think it's something that we've been talking a lot about. It's like, you know, we can create, you know, situations for people to brainstorm and generate ideas. And I think it's what you're even doing with the comments. I think that the big issue is then how do we move from these ideas to some kind of piloting prototypes and probably, you know, implementation, which would be impact, I guess. So, you know, based on what you've done with Do Tank and your more recent work, any thoughts on that? Because to me, I think it's one of a big hurdle of a lot of the work around, you know, social innovation and social change is moving to action. So the design thinking to the doing is complicated.
Yeah, yeah. The design doing is hard. Because, yeah, someone needs to step up to, like when we were doing Miles, right? Like it's very rosy to have the idea on the OpenIDEO platform. When you go down to the street, well, someone needs to figure out what the insurance policy is. Someone needs to, you know, figure out why the landlord would allow you to, you know, go into their storefront and write that, you know, landlord-friendly lease. That who is going to pay for that, right? So I think the design doing part is very much like any entrepreneurship. So I would love to connect that with entrepreneurship, because once you have found a need that people want, it basically could very much become a business idea, right? And you're solving pain points that nobody else supposedly is solving. So I think that's where at least the skin in the game is, you know, if you were able to really crack it, like you're also able to hopefully benefit from it either financially or if it's a social enterprise, you know, socially, you know, you were able to bring impact to more people with the needs that you have identified. So I think with the Do Tank and with what we're doing, I think one of the roles that I think we're doing is actually cultivating this community of people that and also hopefully more partners along the way that are familiar with kind of this kind of uncertainty mindset, right? Like you're going into a new situation in a neighborhood, you're trying to connect different people. Obviously, you're gonna encounter all kinds of things that come out from it. And I feel like, you know, as we're doing these different projects, we have started to get to know a lot of different organizations, designers, NGOs, even businesses that actually do have the same mindset, right? So how do we connect them together, and how do we actually create that peer-to-peer kind of collaboration? And I think and some of the organizations do have resources. So I think the role, social impact is tough. So like, how do we actually connect the resources together to create change? How do we mobilize our teams to be able to do the work? How do we train people that may come and go, right? Like, because especially with NGOs or social enterprises, like people come and go. How do you sort of incorporate that into sort of your day-to-day? And then obviously the bigger goals is trying to push the lever, right? Like the government departments, the bigger corporations, to see if they are also willing to go on to these journeys with you together. And I think all of this is all related, but as you go down to it, then it's all execution. So I think as it comes down to it, it's really how can you be more savvy as each project kind of teaching you things, like you become hopefully leaner, better, and more precise for the next one, so that you can get the person that you're trying to kind of convert them into this sort of new methodology, or like you're trying to align them with this new goal, that they would sort of become your partner along the way.
I'm mindful of the time, and it's morning for me, but it's getting late for you. So I really want to thank you, because I think also your last point about like the need to it's a journey and it's practice. And as we go from project to project, you know, there's things we learn, things that we learn we need to do, and others that we should not do. I will keep this notion of being naive. I really like how you mix space with conversation, and like having them as triggers for conversation and conversation for action or collective action. So it's been a long conversation between you and I for many years, and I really enjoy it. And I hope that we'll keep having this conversation. We had like little moments of collaboration too, so maybe it will come again. But thanks very much for sharing all your insights.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to chat with you, Anne-Laure.
Thank you for listening to the Design Thinking Roundtable podcast, produced by the Social Innova Hub at Nova SBE in partnership with the Design Lab at NYU Makerspace. If you think this episode could be of interest for someone in your community, share it, and don't forget to tag us. Our Twitter handles are Social Innova Hub and NYU Makerspace. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.